their mystery and threat in Luke's eyes.
These might be tricks, said Talon,
but his voice sounded oh so slightly uncertain. They might be, Luke said, but I didn't find them to be. He turned around and moved forward. We should not linger. On they went, step by step. This time, unlike the previous attempt Luke and Ben had made to reach the mists, they made progress. Luke honestly hadn't expected this, but he felt hope rising within him. He didn't know what awaited him inside the shifting gray tendrils of mist, but he was ready to find out. More than ready. He had not gotten this far the last time, and the path became trickier. He slowed his pace, stepping forward carefully. The rock gave way, and he started to fall forward. A strong hand closed far too tightly on his upper arm, yanking him to safety. Thank you, he said to Gavar Kai. Their eyes met, and Kai nodded.
I would not lose our guide quite so soon, Kai said. Besides, now the great Luke Skywalker owes the Kai family a debt.
I would say rather that we are even now, Luke said, disengaging his arm from the Durasteel grip of the Sith Saber. I spared your daughter. Kai's black brows drew together.
Only because you were tracking her, he snarled. Only?
Kai! Snapped Talon. Later. We must find Abeloth before we settle scores.
Kai bridled, but fell silent. Luke turned to continue. At that moment, there was a sharp cry. Luke whirled to see Liha fall on her hands and knees in the water, and he and the other two exhaled in relief. Even Fall smiled shakily.
I slipped,
she said embarrassed, and started to get to her feet.
I thought for sure I...
The hand beneath the water that suddenly seized her wrist was pale purple. So too were the hands that shot out to grab her legs. She struggled, her eyes widening in surprise as her strong, slender body strained for the safety of the path.
My lord, Fall cried.
She got one hand free and reached out to him imploringly, unable to hide her terror. The water did not splash or churn as she fought desperately against the imperfectly glimpsed specters in the inky water.
Liha!
Talon surged toward her. Gavar Kai snatched his arm, just in time to prevent his commander from falling into the cold black depths.
No! No, let me!
Liha's hand closed on a jutting rock, and she tried to pull herself back to safety. But the dead things in the water would have her, and there was nothing living beings could do to stop it. Her hand slipped. She opened her mouth to shout. Water filled it, then closed over her perfect purple face. Talon, still held by Gavar Kai, reached into the water after Liha. Kai grabbed that arm, too, and pulled him back.
It's too late!
Kai shouted. And it was. Liha Fall was already beyond their reach. Luke stared at the sight of her lithe form, still struggling, being borne inexorably downward into an eternal darkness. Aboard the winged dagger, Liha Fall's body spasmed. Her vitals spiked and zigzagged crazily, and the monitor was beeping wildly.
What's going on?
One of her attendants cried, attempting to hold the flailing Kashiri down and trying to read the monitor at the same time.
I don't know. I...
Fall arched, every muscle in her body tight, and then went limp. The jagged lines that had indicated her brain activity suddenly subdued to flatline, although her heart continued to beat and her lungs to draw breath. The two attendants stared at each other. Then one of them cleared her throat and pressed her comlink with steady fingers.
Suma to Captain Sindor. There has been an incident with Commander Fall. All brain activity has ceased. You are once again the commander of the Winged Dagger. Congratulations, Commander.
Thank you,
came Sindor's voice. He made no attempt to hide his pleasure.
Terminate life support and report back to your stations. We will await orders from High Lord Talon.
What happened?
Talon demanded. He jerked his arm free from Kai and turned his fury upon Luke.
What have they done to her?
I don't know, Luke said.
Liar!
Talon spat. He pointed at the dark surface of the lake, as calm as if a few seconds ago there had been no life or death struggle.
Who was that? You said the apparitions were harmless.
I don't know who it was, Luke repeated, keeping his voice calm. And I said that only the ones I encountered were harmless. It seemed as though the depths of eternity were populated by one's enemies. Sith, though she was, and Luke knew of at least one despicable act she had committed. Still, Luke pitied her. He somehow intuited that her fate would be nothing as brief and merciful as drowning. Talon had seemed unduly upset by Fall's death, but now he was recovering.
Let us press on. The less time we spend here, the better I shall like it.
Luke couldn't have agreed more. He turned to continue, then he stopped. It had been Mara who had warned him not to go to the mists.
Forget her, she had urged him. She's one of the old ones. Leave her alone. Trust me, Mara.
What is it, Skywalker?
Snapped Talon.
I thought you said the answers were there, in the mists.
He hadn't seen her, and he had been looking. He had thought, after sensing her so strongly on the ship, that she would be waiting for him. He again looked into the water. He saw many beings, but none he recognized. He had to talk to her. He trusted her. Trusted her more than anyone he had ever known. She had insight now. Insight that could help save him and Ben. Surely she would give it. Mara, he said quietly, knowing that in this place she would hear even a whisper. At first, there was nothing. He did not repeat her name. She would either come or not. And then, he saw her. A small shape in the water, floating up to him. Her long red hair billowing about her like a cloud. Despite everything, Luke smiled. Mara, he said again. Her emerald eyes opened. And she smiled.
Skywalker,
she said, her voice warm.
What are you doing here again?
Luke squatted down. It made no sense. She wasn't physical, any more than he was, even less so. But he still wanted to be closer to her. The woman in the mists, he said. She's not there anymore. We've come for her, Mara. We've come to stop her. Her red brows drew together in a frown.
I can tell who you're keeping company with. They reek of dark side energy.
He laughed softly. That they do, he said. Looking back over his shoulder, they were paying close attention. And I'm sure they're highly complimented by that. But I'm comfortable in my choice. For now, it feels right. And so does going after Abeloth.
Is there anything else you can tell me? About her? Other than to warn you again to stay away from her? No.
She shook her head, her hair swirling about her.
But since you've come back, I guess you're not going to listen to me.
She softened the words with a gentle smile of resignation. No, I have to do this. Too much is at stake. I had thought this would be the most logical place to look for her.
Not if she doesn't want to be found.
He nodded. All right. Back to the old-fashioned way of tracking down an enemy.
Sending in the Emperor's hand?
Luke actually laughed. I do wish you were with me, he said, not caring that the Sith heard the love in his voice.
Let them.
Love was a powerful thing. It had built and shattered empires. shape the history of billions and of two. He was glad of how deeply he had loved and did love. But then again, you have been, he amended. It's meant so much to me to see you in the dreams, to almost be able to roll over and touch you right before I wake up.
Luke,
Mara said gently. He didn't want her to stop him, to tell him she needed to go. Not before he had said what was in his heart. And even when I'm awake, I feel you with me. You even talk to me.
Luke.
He fell silent, regarding her. She searched his eyes for a moment. Then the specter of Mara Jade Skywalker said quietly,
Whoever you were with on the Jade Shadow, it wasn't me.
Chapter 31. Shock exploded through Luke, and he literally stumbled backward a step.
What?
He thought of the female presence aboard the Jade Shadow, slipping into his dreams, and even those moments of borderline wakefulness. A body curved into, an arm draped over him. He had been so convinced it was Mara. It was her ship. She had been his wife. Why wouldn't it be Mara?
What is it, Skywalker?
It was G'var Kai, and his voice was concerned. No doubt he was thinking anything powerful enough to distress Luke was something they all needed to worry about. And maybe it was.
It wasn't me,
Mara repeated.
Who else could it?
And he knew. Horror and repugnance buffeted Luke. He tried to speak, but nothing came out. Luke forced back the shock and nausea. It would serve nothing now. No, it wasn't, he managed finally, his voice raw. I should have known. I'm sorry. Her brilliant green eyes were kind. She was beyond annoyance or jealousy.
You couldn't have. She is ancient and powerful and dangerous. Very dangerous. But you're onto her now. She is never what she appears. Remember that. And next time you feel a ghostly presence lying beside you...
She smiled, even as she began to drift downward, her face becoming a smaller oval in the dark water, her hair a fiery nimbus.
Make sure it's me.
Luke laughed, a sound that was almost a sob, and nodded.
Skywalker, if you have anything to share with us that could help us, please do.
It was Talon's voice, cold and irritated. Luke took a deep breath.
We need to return. Now.
Ben stifled a yawn. Sitting beside his father's body was every bit as boring as it had been back on Sinkhole Station. More so as there wasn't the fear of the unknown to keep him alert. Luke knew what he was doing. His body was safe, and Ben could still sense nothing of Abeloth.
Why do you think she's hiding from us?
He asked Vestara.
I wish I could say I think she was afraid, Vestara said. But I think she's just playing with us.
Do you think we can beat her?
I am Sith, Ben. I'm supposed to think Sith can beat anything in the known universe.
Her voice was serious, but when he glanced over at her, she was smiling. It faded a moment later as she continued.
But she's ancient and very powerful. The only way is if we can trick her somehow.
Trick? Dad wants to go up and start a conversation with her. I'm afraid I have to say I'm with Talon on that. I don't think that'll do much except get us killed.
Yet you were prepared to back his attempt to do so.
So are the Sith.
He paused, peered at her.
Aren't they?
Vestara's gaze slid away.
We'll do whatever is necessary to achieve our goal.
And what is that?
I don't know everything, Ben. I'm just an apprentice, she snapped.
Vistara, he said quietly, don't you get tired of all this? All the plotting, all the scheming, all the backstabbing? Wouldn't it be nice to just trust somebody? To completely let go of your suspicions?
She lifted her eyes to him again, and there was sorrow in their dark brown depths.
It sounds lovely, Ben, but that's not my world. It could be.
The words were on Ben's lips, and he might have uttered them, had not Luke begun to stir. He turned his attention back to his father, checking the drip and making sure the transition back to his body would be an easy one. And it was at that moment that Dion bellowed, bolted upright, and sprang for the door.
Vistara! Ben cried. Stop him!
But the Sith girl actually took a step backward and permitted the Force user to pass. Ben stared at her, anguished and infuriated, unable to leave his father until Luke had fully returned. Vistara turned back to Ben and folded her arms. Luke's blue eyes snapped open and fixed on Ben's face.
What happened? Dion just bolted, Ben snarled. And Vistara let him go.
Dion couldn't believe it. Not Vistara had kept her word, letting him pass freely, and perhaps stopping Not Ben from coming after him. He had hoped that no harm would befall her for helping him. He reached out into the Force, limited as his ability to do so was, and cried out to the being who had called him here.
I come! I come!
He cried silently. He edged carefully behind the jade shadow, and turned to regard the plants crowding the bank. He had no weapon, but through them was the only way to get to Abeloth. He took a deep breath, his heart racing, and stepped forward. The plants did nothing. He laughed, shakily in relief. He took another step, then another, moving confidently now. They neither helped nor hindered him, behaving like ordinary plants on other worlds. Dion took it as a sign, and his spirits continued to lift. Upon reaching the top of the bank, he looked over the beach, at the dozen or so frigates there, then up at the volcano. He sensed her there, waiting for him, and tears stung his eyes. Dion knew he would have to be very careful. He could not allow his enemies to follow him. He believed not Vistara about the not Sith supporting Abeloth, but even so, he would not put his mistress in danger. It was possible the not Jedi might come out and see him. Slowly, although he ached to break into a run, he cleared another rise and half walked, half slid down the other side.
You what?
Luke was sitting up now, anger in his blue eyes.
I let him go,
Vistara said.
I convinced him that I was on his and Abeloth's side. He was aching to go to her, and he knew where to find her. While I was assuring him that the Sith were his and Abeloth's dear friends and supporters, I planted a tracking device on him. She fished in the pocket of her robe, held out a small piece of equipment, and wagged it at them, smiling a little. And it's working beautifully. Did you get any insight beyond shadows?
Ben let out a small laugh that sounded like a yelp.
Well, you might have told us, you know.
She shrugged.
I didn't think you'd trust me.
I don't, Luke said. But right now it really is the only lead we have.
We lost Fall. The spirits in the Lake of Apparitions, apparently some old enemies, had a grudge to settle. She fell into the water, and they dragged her down. Vistara shrugged again.
I never much cared for her anyway. I dare say she had accumulated quite a lot of old enemies with grudges.
That's probably true of every Sith, Luke said.
He turned to Ben.
I think we may have an edge we can use against Abeloth, though.
She seems to have a particular interest in me. I'm not sure why.
In Jedi, or in you in particular? Ben asked.
Me, in particular. She... have you felt any kind of a feminine presence on the ship, Ben?
His son nodded.
Yeah, I thought it was Mom, this being her ship and all, and you and I the only ones on it for a long time. I kind of felt she was looking after us.
I did too, Luke said. But I saw Mom in the lake, and she said it wasn't her.
Ben gasped and drew back slightly. He didn't need confirmation on who it actually was.
That's really creepy, Dad.
I know, Luke said, and grimaced slightly. But the good news is, we can use that against her.
She did seem particularly interested in you,
Vistara said.
They both turned to look at her.
Ben let out an exasperated sound.
Again, Vess, why didn't you tell us?
I didn't think it was personal. I just thought she was gravitating toward power.
Her voice was sincere, almost apologetic.
I'm sorry. I should have said something earlier.
Well, at least we know it's not our imaginations, Luke said. Come on, let's meet up with Talon and the others and follow where Vistara's hound is leading us.
She was there,
waiting for him. She stood outside the entrance to her cave, between the two large boulders on either side. Her dress clung to her tall, strongly muscled form, blown back against her by a gentle wind. It toyed with her thick, dark hair, and as she turned to him, smiling widely, her gray eyes were alight with joy.
Dion, she said, you've found me. You've come home.
He stood for a moment, trembling from the exertion, sweat gleaming on his brow, drinking her in. He loved her. He felt her need of him, her wanting, her yearning. Not passionate, but as sweet as it was intense. It was like a vine entwining about him, pulling him toward her. He was unable to resist it, but then he did not try. He felt seen and known and cherished, like a lost child who finally has found his way back to a loving mother. Dion stumbled toward Abeloth, peace radiating through him as she caught his hands with her own. Peace and certainty. She looked up at him, only a little way, for she was tall, and her gray eyes crinkled in a smile.
I've been so alone,
Dion whispered.
I know,
she said, touching his cheek gently.
All that you have known, all that you have learned, these beings do not understand who we are, what we are. You have brothers and sisters, Dion, scattered everywhere. Once you were with me, here in the Maw. Once you were all with me. Now you are apart. But one by one, you are all awakening. And once awake, you can hear my call and come to me.
I come, Dion whispered. This is where I belong. All my life, I've searched for a purpose.
And now you know that purpose.
Abeloth agreed, closing what little space remained between them with a step. Only a few centimeters separated them now. They were so close, he could feel and smell her breath, sweet as flowers, caressing his face.
To serve me, to be with me, part of me. I need you, Dion. I need you very much.
I want to be with you, with my brothers and sisters, Dion said. I want to understand.
You will,
she assured him.
You will be with them, with me, as long as I live, and I,
she whispered,
reaching up to cup his cheeks with her strong, warm hands.
We'll live forever.
And that was when the torment started. He stood frozen in place as securely as if his feet had rooted there. He couldn't move, couldn't pull back, couldn't cry out in pain or in warning, for now he suddenly realized that this being was not what he had thought, was not what she, was it even a she, had pretended to be. The smile, so loving, grew cruel. It spread across her face, widening like a crack in the ground, the lips growing hideously full in that dreadful smile. Her eyes turned from gray to silver to white and grew smaller, seeming to recede into the suddenly black depths of her eye sockets, like something falling into a well. Her hair sprouted, grew undulating as it rippled to her feet, and the hands, the strong human hands that had cupped his face so tenderly, now became tiny, slimy tentacles that seemed to thrust into his skull, into his brain, and suck out what they found there. A terrible heat, white hot, seared him there, and he smelled burning flesh. Then his heart spasmed in terror as she moved that hideous, huge mouth closer, closer, until it was touching his own. She pulled back, and a glowing golden mist clung to her lips. The mist grew, mercifully obscuring her face as she extracted. A deep, agonized groan was ripped from Dion, hauled from his innermost soul, floating on that golden mist. Every limb, every centimeter, every cell of him was coming under attack. It was not like the searing, focused pain in his temple. This pain was aching and deep. The pain at his temple changed from white hot to icy cold, and it began to enter him as Abeloth pulled forth something.
Life energy! She's taking my life essence!
From his body, she gave in return a dreadful cold, a slithering, dark cold that wrapped around his throat, closing it, then his heart, then his entrails, then seeped implacably into the rest of him. He could feel himself withering up, the desiccation turning him into a living corpse, dried and husk-like, as if he had been buried in the sand for centuries. Abeloth chuckled, a throaty, warm sound.
You have served me well. Better than any have in a long time. Soon we will become one, Dion Stad. Soon you will never leave me, and you will have enabled me to continue.
Chapter 32. The cave, said Vestara, peering at the tracking device. Sweat beaded her face, and tendrils of dark hair clung clammily to her cheeks and neck. They were all baking in the blue sunlight. Under other circumstances, Luke suspected that the Sith would waste the Force by creating cool breezes and lowering their body temperature. But not now, not here. There was no place for trivialities here. There were 20 of them who had fought their way through the voracious plant life lurking on the shores and in the Red River itself. 20 of them left, anyway. The yellow water plants and the funnel-shaped trees claimed 2 Sith before they were finally beaten back. Blasted with Force energy, sliced by lightsabers of 3 different hues, and cut by glass parangs, the damaged foliage hung back almost sullenly as the group stood at the base of the cliff.
It seems too obvious, Talon said.
He frowned as he regarded the small, dark shape about a kilometer up the shoulder of the volcanic mountain.
Even if Abeloth is unaware that we placed a tracking device on Dion, which I doubt, she knows that this is the place Vestara first encountered her. Why would she wait here to be attacked?
It could be more of a stronghold than Vestara realized.
Luke said. His voice was doubtful.
This could be her ultimate seat of power somehow.
To Luke, this whole place reeked of Darkseid. It was strong where the cave was, to be sure, but there were other places on this world where Darkseid energy gathered just as strongly, even more so.
Or there could be a nice little trap waiting for us, which seems more likely.
A trap is only a trap if it takes one by surprise,
Gavar Kai said.
Otherwise, it is merely an obstacle to be overcome.
On that, at least, we are agreed. Let's find out which. They moved quickly, despite the heat, up the trail to the entrance to the cave, weapons in hand, senses alert. It was no trap. It was no attack. Abeloth was not here, but her cat's paw was. Dion lay on the floor of the cave, his face and arms pale and visible even in the dim lighting. A quick check, both with conventional tools and in the Force, revealed that he was alone, and Ben raced up to him.
He's still alive, Ben said, but only just.
Dion opened his eyes. Luke expected him to struggle, but instead he reached out and clasped Ben's shoulder.
Ben, so sorry.
Ben and Luke exchanged glances.
You know me? You don't think I'm an imposter?
She's not what she seems,
Dion gasped.
She tricked me. You still seem wrong to me, but I know that's her influence. She tried to kill me. She sensed you coming and left me for dead.
Let her fear us, Talon said. Hundreds of Sith, powerful in the Force, come to take her down. She should know fear.
I believe that she left, but not because she was afraid, Luke said. He and Ben helped Dion to his feet. Color was starting to return to his face.
You all right?
I am now.
Good timing, he said, and gave Luke a weak grin.
She tried to drain my life energy somehow.
Looks like once the contact is broken, you're all right,
Ben said.
Good thing to know if she tries that kind of attack on us.
He smiled at Dion, who seemed to grow stronger by the minute.
Where did she go?
Luke asked. Dion pointed to the back of the cave. In the red glow of several lit lightsabers, everyone could easily see the mouth of a tunnel that opened onto utter blackness.
There,
Dion said.
Do you know where this tunnel leads?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Luke turned to the others.
I think she went through here to better her attack position, and it was a smart move. There could be all kinds of traps or dangers in that tunnel.
She'll certainly be waiting to pounce the second we emerge on the other end.
I cannot sense her in the Force, Talon said,
and the admission clearly pained him.
Now that Dion is no longer with her, I think that this is unfortunately our only option.
Unease rippled through those assembled. Vistara took a step closer to her father, who reached out to squeeze her shoulder briefly. It was, Luke mused, likely certain death. Abeloth held every advantage now. But if they were slain or taken, there were at least several hundred other Sith who had come. It was not an even fight, but it was a fairer one than he had had any right to expect.
I think so too, Luke said. Ben and I can go first, and if it's safe, we can let the rest of you know.
Talon flushed, his lavender cheeks turning dark purple.
Are you calling us cowards, Master Skywalker?
No, Luke said. You're the one who used that term.
I am not afraid, nor is anyone else here,
Talon growled.
Then you're an idiot, Luke said. You should be afraid. Lack of fear makes one careless, and being careless here will get you killed.
He gave Dion a comlink.
You stay here.
I'd like to come with you, Dion said.
You've already helped a great deal, Luke said. But I need someone here I can trust if this backfires, and she comes back this way. Talon,
Pick some of your people to stay here and give Dion some backup support.
Talon's eyes narrowed. Luke knew he was pushing the Kashiri by continuing to angle for control of the situation. But he also knew that showing anything that could be perceived as weakness to this Sith would be fatal. Luke was significant in some way to Abeloth. Although that thought disgusted him, Talon knew it. He might dislike Luke, might take joy in attacking him, but he would not until his own purposes had been achieved.
It is wise to cover all avenues of her possible escape, Talon said, instead of what he no doubt wished to say, and nodded to two others. Let us know if you see anything out of the ordinary here, he told them, and turned back to Luke.
He offered a completely false smile.
Let us go to Abeloth then, Master Skywalker. And since this is again your plan...
He left the sentence unfinished, instead extending a hand mockingly toward the yawning black mouth of the tunnel.
Luke did not put walking through a dark, tight tunnel with several Sith behind him at the top of his list of highlights of his life, but it was not as bad as he had feared. The tunnel was clearly artificial. It was almost a perfect circle, and was wide enough to permit everyone to walk erect, even to have some freedom of movement. It went slightly downward at first, leading them through the mountain. Roots, powerful on this world, had forced their way through the sheer stone in clumps, slicked with some kind of ooze that dissolved the corpses of the small animals clutched in their grip. Abeloth apparently had not had time to rig any elaborate traps for them, nor did the tunnel suddenly abruptly collapse. The greatest threat came from the occasional root that came to life, pushing through the top of the packed soil passageway, attempting to wrap around a throat, or from the bottom to seize an ankle. The ooze was not acidic, although it was likely toxic, and there were no injuries. The roots were quickly repelled with the glass parangs each Sith appeared to carry, or a quick, precise lightsaber stroke.
It seems our luck is holding, Gavar Kai said.
For now, Luke cautioned. He and Ben led the way, with Talon, Vestara, and Kai behind them. She may simply be conserving her strength.
For a Jedi who is supposed to be so positive, you are quite the pessimist, Kai said.
Confidence radiated from him. Luke mentally shook his head. Kai was strong in the Force, as was his offspring. He was, Luke was certain, well-trained in combat. But there was a naivete about these Sith that confounded him, as if they were at once ancient and new. He hoped he'd live long enough to get to the bottom of it. A realist, Kai. I've seen quite a lot in my life. I know to expect the unexpected. Your Sith underestimated Abeloth once before. How many did you lose last time, Talon?
The Sith High Lord did not reply.
The tension increased, and the rest of the way through the tunnel was spent in a silence that was broken only by the sound of errant roots being slashed. Finally, Luke halted.
Extinguish lightsabers, he said.
What?
Exclaimed Talon. Just do it, he said.
There was some muttering, but one by one, the red lights went out. And up ahead, they could all see the bright blue smudge of light that showed the end of the tunnel. Luke extended his thoughts in the Force, but again could sense nothing. He frowned, perplexed. He had no doubt that Abeloth knew exactly where they were. If she could reach his consciousness aboard the Jade Shadow in his sleep, a thought that still turned his stomach, surely she would know how to find him here, where her power was the strongest. He couldn't imagine she wouldn't be out there waiting for them, ready to pounce.
Activate lightsabers, Luke said, and be ready for anything.
There were several sounds of the snap hiss of the lightsabers in the underground corridor that was no doubt about to deliver them right into Abeloth's hands. Or tentacles. He held the lightsaber in his right hand and counted down. 3, 2, 1.
and then they rushed forward into the blue light of day, into the empty ruin of an old courtyard, overgrown with vines, tree ferns, and other plants. It was contained by steep walls on all sides. Pillars jutted up, blue-green with moss. In the center of the courtyard was the basin of a fountain. The sound of its bubbling floated to them on the still, hot air that stank of sulfur. And from the fountain, buffeting him in the force as the sulfur was assaulting his physical senses, rose dark side energy. Luke knew the place at once. He had been here, beyond shadows. This was where he had seen Abeloth for the first time, had seen her grotesque face in the dark cloud formed by the sulfur, had felt her tentacles wrapping around his leg, trying to wriggle their cold way inside of him, whispering his name.
"Luke,"
it had said.
"Come."
He had refused her then. Mara had warned him not to continue pursuing her. He couldn't see her, couldn't feel her, but he knew she had to be here. "Abeloth," he called. "Abeloth, I'm here."
"So am I."
Luke whirled. As he turned to face her, out of the corner of his eye, he saw his companions all stiffen suddenly, expressions of stark terror on their faces. But he had no time for them, not when she had finally appeared. Standing before him was not the monstrous, hideous form he had seen beyond shadows. No being with long, straw-like blonde hair, tiny eyes like deep-set stars, a too-wide mouth and arms that ended in writhing tentacles. No, this being did not present that form to his eyes. She was tall, true, but looked human. She had long, curly, dark hair, thick and heavy. Her eyes were gray and crinkled in a smile. And then she shifted again, the hair shortening, becoming straight, the color of honey, the eyes turning a slightly silvery shade of gray. "Luke," she said, stepping forward. Her eyes were bright with tears, and the arms that she extended to him trembled. "You've come for me. You finally come for me. I knew you would. All this time I had faith." For the second time that day, Luke was sent reeling in shock. He stared at Abeloth, at this being that had done so much harm to so many, who had driven young Jedi mad, who had taken so many lives. This ancient, evil being of whom even Mara Jade was afraid. And he knew her. He suddenly, sickly, understood why it was she had been able to touch him so profoundly, so tenderly aboard the Jade Shadow. Why it had been so easy for him to confuse that contact, which should have been so reprehensible, with that of the loving touch of his mate. Because he had once loved her, with his whole heart and being. Loved her more than anything in the universe. Had once intended to breathe his last breath in her arms. "Callista," he whispered.
Chapter 33. "I knew you would know me," the creature whispered. Her gray eyes were bright, bright as stars, and they glistened with tears of joy. "You have always been able to know me. You knew me when my very essence was a part of a ship. You knew me when it was in a body that was not my own. And even now, even here, you know me."
Luke stared at her, his vision tunneling, blood thundering in his ears. Not since Darth Vader had uttered the terrible words, "I am your father," had he been so shaken. He couldn't help it. He extended a hand, clasped hers, and they met in the Force. Time stopped. This thing was indeed Abeloth, was the being who had slithered into his son's mind when Ben was just a toddler, was the instigator of mad Jedi, had turned plants to predators that attacked her enemies, had destroyed Sinkhole Station and the hundreds of unfortunates who dwelt there.
It was horrific, radiating dark side energy, fueled by hatred and evil, by fear, and by need and by loneliness. It represented everything Luke had dedicated his life to fighting. It was also, inconceivably, impossibly, Callista. This was no trick, no act. This was no illusion to make him think of his lost love, to soften him so she could strike when his guard was down. That would be difficult enough to have to witness. But this really was Callista. He had fallen in love with her when, at the time of her body's death, her spirit had been woven into the dreadnought Eye of Palpatine. Callista's physical self had been destroyed, but she had used her force skills to merge with the vessel. There, she had spoken with Luke, had shared visions of her life with him through the Force. He had had dreams of her then, as he had aboard the Jade Shadow. Dreams of her lying beside and behind him, her long, strong body pressing comfortingly into his. He'd fallen truly and deeply in love with a spirit, a soul. Later, his student Cray Mingla, for personal reasons of her own, had chosen to give her body to Callista so that she and Luke could finally be together. Still dazed, he recalled the description that Vistara had given of Abeloth. Sometimes she had dark, thick, curly hair, such as Callista had had in her first life. Sometimes she appeared with the short, honey-gold, stylish locks that Cray Mingla had worn. Tears stung his eyes, and his heart swelled with a bittersweet aching. Oh, it was her. It was his Callie, and the love he had once felt for her was still there, still sweet and warm and true. In becoming human once again, Callista had lost her connection to the Force. She had learned that she could only touch the dark side, and they had parted ways long ago as she embarked on a journey to recover her Force powers. He felt Callista affirming his thoughts, her essence washing over and around and through him, her love bright and true and strong, and the tears began to pour down his face. Luke leaned forward, pressing his forehead to hers. She had come here, seeking answers, and found only the lonely, needy monster imprisoned at the heart of the Maw. The thing that had lured Jason in, had damaged so many, had grown and fed and used Callista as it had used others before and since. The warmth enveloping him chilled suddenly. He pulled back just slightly from her presence in the Force. Immediately, her longing for him became not sweet, but desperate. Frightened, needy. He felt the tentacles slipping into the center of his being. She had him again, after so long, too long. She had been a fool to have walked away from what they had had together, to have let him marry another, father a child, not of her body. It had been wrong, and she would not make that mistake again, ever. They had found each other. She and Luke Skywalker, after so many wrong turns and bitter regrets, her one true love. And they would now be together. Forever. No, that was not the way. Luke touched her cheek gently, and she leaned into his hand. Luke wanted to help her. He needed to take her away from here, find a way to separate that part of her that was warm, stubborn, brave, humorous Callista from the monster in the Maw, capable of such vast evil and cruelty. It would be all right. It would be all right. He could unravel the bright thread of Callista from the ugly tapestry of Abeloth and her darkness. He knew he could, if she would let him. Let him? Let him? Let him take away the power she had discovered? Let herself become less than the magnificent being into which she had evolved? No, Luke had it all wrong. She would make him like her, would teach him to grow so far beyond himself that he would laugh at the small being he had once been, even as she now laughed gently at his misguided earnestness. This was why he had come. Luke's path had led him here, beyond any hope or dream or wish, to the Maw, to Callista's arms again. And now he would never leave. They would be together, the way she was, and the way she would make him for eternity. Luke's heart broke again inside him. Mara's words came back to him.
She is never what she seems to be.
This being was not Callista. Oh, it wore parts of her like some obscene costume. Real, true parts of her. Parts that made him ache to behold. But it was not her. Callista had once vowed to never use the Force again if the only way to do so was to touch the dark side. She had fought bravely in the Clone Wars, had sacrificed her life to save others. She was a Jedi, and he knew now that she was as dead as if he had seen her lifeless body. The woman he had loved was gone. Abeloth had taken her, as she had already taken so much from so many. He wanted to reach Callista, to save her, but he realized, sickly, that there was not enough left to save. I'm sorry. I can't help you. Callista? No, it wasn't her. He needed to stop thinking of her as that. Abeloth dropped his hands and stepped back, shock on her face.
After all this? After all we went through, together and apart, you would forsake me?
Tears filled the silver-gray eyes, poured down her cheeks. Luke swallowed, forcing calm alertness through his body. He dropped into a pre-fighting stance, balancing lightly on the balls of his feet, the lightsaber still lit in his hand.
You might once have had a part of Callista in you, he said quietly. But whatever was good and true and right about her, that's all gone. You took it all and left only shards of her behind, just like you tried to do with Dion. For the love I once bore her, I again say, I am sorry. I cannot help you.
She continued to gaze at him, and the expression on her face would have moved a harder heart than Luke's. But his was already broken with the knowledge of what had happened. That his Callie was gone forever. He continued to regard her solemnly, and she fell to her knees, looking dazed. Sobs racked her frame, and she lowered her head.
Then you doom all you love, Luke Skywalker,
said Abeloth. Three voices seemed to come from that throat. She raised her head. Her face had changed, had become that ugly, thin-eyed, wide-mouthed monster. Except the part of her that remained Callista. Luke wasn't sure which. The nose, the hair. But it was an obscene amalgam he knew was designed to torture him. He had refused her, and she would destroy him. Her eye suddenly blinked quickly, and she glanced upward. Luke could feel it now, too. A tingling of dark side energy overhead. But nothing of Abeloth's doing. Hope surged within him. In her arrogance and her fixation on Luke, Abeloth had discounted the hundreds of Sith scattered over the area. She had focused on him to the exclusion of almost everyone else who was physically with him, and certainly those who were not. And thus ignored, the rest of the Sith had begun their weaving. The Dathomiri Night Sisters used the Force to create a sort of net called a control web. Working together as a team, they wove tendrils of Force energy together and extended it over an area of ground. It felt as if a ball of yarn were being tossed from one to the other as strands of energy crisscrossed and interwove. Beasts beneath this net, this web, would obey the weavers. Luke, Ben, and Vistara had all been first-hand witnesses to this web-weaving on Dathomir. Never let it be said, Luke thought, that the Sith did not learn quickly, nor that they did not know a good thing when they saw it. It had been Vistara's suggestion to have those who were not directly involved in attacking Abeloth stand by and work together. The weaving was shaky, inexpert,
but with so many strands from such powerful force users, hundreds as opposed to tens, even this beginner's web was enough to unsettle Abeloth as they had hoped it would. She lowered her head, fixed him with anger and rage, and lifted her hands. And suddenly, Luke knew what she intended. Who she would attack. It would not be him. Luke charged. It was out there. Jaina could feel it. Ship. The Sith training vessel Ben had once piloted, that he found on Zyost and had awakened from its centuries of slumber. The vessel she, Jag, and Zek had encountered not so long ago on Lumaya's asteroid. The vessel Zek had sent away from Alima Rar, with instructions to find a better master. And it most certainly had. It had found the Lost Tribe. And Jaina knew that if she could feel it, it could feel her. Oh well, Jaina thought, shrugging mentally as she piloted her Stealth X toward where she sensed the meditation sphere was lurking. From what little the tight-lipped Sith girl had shared with Ben and Luke had passed on to Jaina, Ship had been very chummy with the Lost Tribe Sith, until Abeloth had called it to serve her. Vistara had said that Ship felt unhappy obeying Abeloth, but that could be Sith lies. Regardless, to Jedi it was an enemy, whoever was controlling it, and she wanted to blast the cursed thing to tiny bits of whatever it was made of. She could sense it more clearly now. She'd expected it to be in the atmosphere, probably already attacking the group assembled to harm its master. But it was in orbit about the planet, doing nothing. No, not nothing. Waiting. She could see it now, a tiny dot on her tactical display.
Rowdy, get me a better look at this thing. Why would anyone want that? Those things are ugly.
Jaina smiled a little. Agreed. She'd given the astromech a new name, and a sort of personality, tinkering with it recently to upgrade it with a humor protocol. Despite its wisecrack, the droid of course obeyed, and Jaina got her first good look at the Sith meditation sphere. She'd not seen it up close before, and it was even uglier than she had expected. It looked like a giant yellow-orange eye, covered with veins, with spikes on four sides, and propelled by bat-like wings. Jaina shook her head at the thought that it had been her cousin who had found this thing, who had gone inside it and made it obey him.
I see you, Jedi Solo.
I see you, big, ugly, orange-red thing.
Humor rolled off it. Then she felt it, ignoring her. Her immediate reaction was irritation.
You're working with Abeloth.
I am programmed to obey a strong will. The girl is strong. You are stronger, Sword of the Jedi. But neither of you can break the hold she has on me. She is older and more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
So powerful she has you just sitting there because she anticipates needing you, instead of letting you fight me. Is that it?
She felt stoic silence in the Force.
Enough chit-chat, she said to Rowdy. Launch Shadow Bomb 1.
She felt a gentle bump beneath her seat as the bomb was forced from the tube. She reached out for it in the Force, her eyes fixed on Ship, directing the bomb directly toward it. It simply sat there. For a wild moment, Jaina wondered exactly how sentient it was. Why wasn't it attacking her, or moving out of the way? Was this thing choosing suicide by Jedi, rather than continuing to help Abeloth against the Sith it had been designed to serve? Was it really going to... And suddenly, as if someone had snatched something she was holding right out of her hand, she felt Ship commandeer the direction of the bomb, and send it spiraling off, harmlessly. It turned to face her now. And as Jaina watched, its surface seemed to shiver. Strange appendages began to form, and she realized Ship was making its own weapons and training them on her. The battle was on. Good. Abeloth was raging. Ben felt buffeted by the sheer hatred roiling off her. Sweat sprung on his brow, beneath his arms, and a brush of what had terrified him so badly a few moments ago shuddered through him. She turned her tiny eyes upon him, and he gripped his lightsaber. If this really was Callista, or rather, what the thing in the maw had left of someone his father once loved, then he knew there was no better target to hurt Luke Skywalker than himself. What could he do against her, really? But he had to try. He took his cue from his father, who had lifted his lightsaber and charged the creature. Talon and Kai, too, rushed into the fray. Ben started to join them. Vistara was right by his side. Abeloth was still staring at Ben, and as he raced toward her, she smiled and flicked three of the tiny tentacles that served as fingers. Beside Ben, Vistara's eyes flew wide as something seized her by the throat, lifted her 2 meters off the ground, and shook her. She dropped her lightsaber, one hand going to her throat, attempting to pry off the invisible fingers, the other hand outstretched, fingers splayed hard. Blue force lightning shot from her palm to dance erratically in the air around her for a moment, not reaching its target. Then, inexorably, the blue lightning began to twist, like heated metal folding, to go back on its creator. At the same moment, a thick white root tipped with finger-length barbs shot out of the ground. The roots capped with a thick green spike twisted around Vistara, then reared back like a snake about to strike. Vistara's eyes darted to the spike, and she yanked in her hand, folding her arm over her chest as the spike struck home a second time. "Vistara!" shrieked Ben. He sprang forward, slashing frantically at the vines, calling her name again and again. She dropped like a stone to the ground, landing hard on her arm, face twisted in agony, booted feet churning up the loose soil. Blood poured from several puncture wounds on her arm and chest, and there was something obviously wrong with her shoulder. Tears poured from her eyes, but she stayed silent, so silent. "Vistara!" He gathered her in his arms and raced away from Abeloth's fury, setting her down, away from the vegetation that even now struggled to crawl up on her. Her face was sweaty, and her eyes rolled in her head. Ben realized he was shaking as he cradled her.
"It's okay. I've got you, Vess. You're okay,"
he murmured over and over again. He forced his fingers to stop trembling as he tried to examine her injuries. There didn't seem to be anything life-threatening. It looked like the shoulder was dislocated. The puncture wounds were deep, but nothing had hit a vital organ or artery. Relief flooded him. She was going to be all right. Ben gave her a quick smile and turned, started to rise. Her hand, slick with warm blood, clamped down on his arm. She was shaking.
"Don't leave me,"
she whispered.
Poison.
Ben felt as though someone was squeezing his heart, as he swore violently. He hadn't seen anything to indicate that the spikes on the roots were poisoned, but Vistara had been here before. If she thought the barbs were poisoned, Ben wasn't about to take a chance. He glanced over at his father, even as he rifled through his pouch for something, anything that would help. Abeloth was surrounded by five powerful Force users. Luke Skywalker, High Lord Talon, Saber Gavar Kai, and two others Ben didn't know. It was almost like a dance, with the combatants leaping, somersaulting in midair, tumbling aside. The cries of curses and the musical Kashyyyk tongue. The unique sound of the sizzle of lightsabers batting back force lightning. The smell of sulfur all combined to unsettle Ben. And even as he watched, Abeloth suddenly was not there. The ring of five enemies was now inadvertently battling one another. Gavar Kai grunted in annoyance as his red blade sliced cleanly through not the monstrous Abeloth, but one of his fellow Sith. Luke had to force leap straight up to avoid the blade's follow-through, landing lightly on his feet and looking about for their escaped enemy. Mocking laughter seemed to echo from all directions. They sprang apart, and then there she was again, at the far end of the courtyard, laughing as the four raced toward her. Their comrade lay dead and ignored, and as Ben watched, the vines reached to latch on to the corpse and started to pull away the pieces. Again, the three Sith and Luke encircled Abeloth, and this time they seemed to be wearing her down. Ben ached to help them, but Vistara... Gavar Kai surged forward, bringing his lightsaber down on the whirling, dancing figure that was the laughing Abeloth. At the last moment, he diverted the blade, and Ben watched in horror as it swung not to the agreed-upon common enemy, but at his father. At the same moment, he felt the net being woven high above them tighten. The Sith had betrayed them. Ship was good. It had taken Jaina two tries before she was able to prevent Ship from redirecting the shadow bomb she fired at it. In the meantime, she contented herself with laser cannons, smiling grimly as she simultaneously saw and felt the blast strike the Sith vessel. Its self-created weapons fired in return, steady and rapid. Jaina pulled back on the stick hard and was slammed back against her seat. Rowdy tootled in distress.
Whose side are you on?
Jaina didn't have breath to answer. Taking the stealth X into a roll that brought it underneath the spherical vessel, where it didn't have suddenly sprouted cannons, and launching a volley of torpedoes. Except now it did have suddenly sprouted cannons there, and they were firing. Jaina's blast tinting darkened instantly, and she hung on as her ship spiraled out of control, struggling to bring it back in line before it was too late.
Dad!
Ben screamed. Luke heard him, and just in time got his own blade up. Red and green clashed, sizzling.
Ben, please, I need...
Ben shook off the clinging.